you were known as a gentleman, weren't you? That was what you're renowned as, a gentleman of the game.
I don't know whether that's a good thing or not. Maybe not these days. I suppose you've got to be a bit of devil in you or something to please the public or please the television people.
They mightn't have seen your devil, Arthur.
Well, I played a lot of rugby during the war time, so I had to have a bit of a devil in me, I think.
When do you reckon the gentleman of the game, cricket was known as a gentleman's game, when do you reckon that sort of stopped in your mind?
Well, I there was no sledging in my time. I mean, a fast bowler did his block occasionally, as you are always used to doing. Occasionally somebody'll have a good quip or something like that. But certainly in my time, particularly after the war, there was no sledging. Anyway, why would you be sledging people who'd just been fighting in a war for six years? You had enough sledging then without worrying about yourself and picking off people, premeditating sledges with batsmen or whatever it might be. No, so we didn't have any of that, thank God.
But if you played and missed a couple of times at a delivery off a lunatic fast bowler, how would he carry? Would he just carry on and swear to a little bit of swearing or nothing?
No, we never got it. There wasn't anything like that. I mean, you've got to remember, this is just after war, and you didn't attack the opposition. Most of the fellows who we played against had been in the army or services anyway. And most of the fellows on our side, apart from Neil Harvey, because he was too young, had all been in the service at some stage. And you'd hardly expect us to be getting stuck into the opposition. And it was more a gentlemanly thing that, you know, well played, old fellows. That sort of jazz, you know. But that's what it was. I remember when Don Bradman got his duck in the last innings, and I thought that the only thing I could hear the captain saying to Eric Hollies was dead silence everywhere. And he said to him, "Jolly well bowled, Eric, sir." You can imagine that happening today.
You got, in your third test match, you made 155 at the MCG against England. And then your fourth test match, you got 122 and 124 not out at Adelaide. And the tragedy in that was you had a partnership with Don Bradman of 99.
Yes, but he got a duck in that match, didn't he?
In the first innings, did he?
Yeah, so I must have said Jonah for him when I was up the other end. He got another one later on.
Well, when Bradman made a duck, what was he like? You mightn't have known because you kept batting, but what was he like in the rooms when he made? Was he one of those blokes who went a bit quiet and a bit surly when he got a blob?
Oh, no. It was just the same whether he got 100. He got so many hundreds, I suppose he got just as much board as when he got a duck. But if he got a duck, he walked out just the same as he did it when he got 100. He tucked the bat under his arm and off he went.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, so there was no drama at all in regard to that.
So the blokes that carry on with ducks and all that sort of thing, that must have been a weight when the sledging and all that sort of must, you know, 15, 20, 30 years later when all that sort of thing came in. But your eighth test match was against India at the MCG, and this is when you, fine moment, I would think for you, obviously 100 not out, but you put on 223 with Sir Donald.
Uh-huh. When was that?
That was your eighth test match against India.
Yeah, against India, that's right, yeah. Yeah, we had to run a four in the last ball. So that, you know, there was no one far out on the leg side, and I sneaked a shot out there, and we ran like hell, and then we got ran four, so I got 100, because he wasn't going to bat next day, so that was smart, wasn't it?
And then the Ashes, the 48 Ashes is obviously the famous, it's so famous. But
it was a very good team, actually. You know, it's just after the war. And
five team of the century.
Had a good mixture of older blokes and a couple of the young ones, you know.
What about this 1948 Ashes trip? The ship left Fremantle on the 19th of March. Now, I assume you've had to catch a train over from Sydney, from Bondi, where you lived.
Yeah, well, I think, I lived in, that's right, I was living in Sydney then. Being a son of a schoolmaster, I lived in a few places. But I think what we did do, I know we played in Tasmania, and then came back. So we had to fly. We must have flown to Fremantle and then got on to got on the ship at Fremantle, I would think, and if I can remember it correctly, because we did that in 1953 too.
Well, the ship sets off on the 19th of March from Fremantle.
Yeah.
And you're playing a game in Scotland on the 19th of September. I mean, we'll talk about the series in a moment, but what are we talking 9 or 10 months away from home, for goodness sake?
It certainly was, and the fellows who were married, the wives weren't allowed to go. So it was a pretty lonely old trip. But you're playing 6 days a week, have a match off occasionally. The counties liked to have us playing against them because at that time we were the main source of money for them, because that was before television and all the advertising and promotional stuff was entered into the game. And people like Bradman, of course, every county wanted him to play, to play, because it meant more people in the house. But it was pretty tiring. As you went on along there.
Sure it was.
I did enjoy the ship going over.
What did you do on the ship, Arthur? How did you keep yourself entertained? You mentioned this was before television.
I just had breakfast in the morning and then I had to go up and read for a while. Some people used to go up and throw a quid around the desk upstairs or something. And then we'd have lunch and... the bar had opened at 12 and I'd have lunch, and then you'd get in the afternoon, have your first, put your black tie on to your first cocktail party of the evening, and then have dinner, and the bar closed at 12, and then I used to get up at 9 o'clock next day.
You'd put on 2 stone, wouldn't you, on that trip?
It was tough going, yes.
Tough going.
But we did play it on the way. We played it in Colombo. And that's the only place we played. We went on, next stop was Bombay, Mumbai, it is today. And Don Bradman couldn't get off the ship. There were about 10,000 people there on the waiting for him.
Wow.
You know, because of his name, they'd never heard of him. They'd only read about him, etc. And so the rest of us got off the ship and wandered around, but he couldn't get off the ship. And then we went on to Aden. In Yemen now today, and then up the Red Sea and Port Said, and on to, he went in, had a look at Cairo. Then in the Mediterranean, I think with that particularly one, we went to Naples, I think, and then on to London. So it was, you know, quite interesting, and it was very pleasant. We travelled first class. As you know, Rodney, as a cricketer, you don't expect to travel anything first class, do you?
You had Sir Donald with you, that's why you travel first class.
Oh, don't tell me you didn't travel first class. No.
The first lead-up game in England was at Worcester,
yeah.
and yourself and Bradman both got hundreds, and you put on 160, and that was an omen. You must have been in pretty good form at the time. Did you get a bit of a feel? Did you sense around the corner was a good series?
I'd had, a couple of... previously, we had, as you mentioned earlier, we had a get together for a few runs in Adelaide, wasn't it? I think no, it might have been in Melbourne. It's in the end, and even the mind is starting to slow up, as you can hear.
Well, it's going pretty well, I reckon.
But anyway, we it was good to get. Actually, when I'd played overseas, I got 100 in the first game in England, and when we played in West Indies, I got 100 in the first game there,
India.
Where I played England, in South Africa, I got 100 in the first game. So it was one of those strange things that happened. So I was pleased we had a good gathering up with, what's the word for it, and the partnership with Don Bradman, because he was the big deal, you know. I think a great cricketer, a great batsman, and a good diplomat, and a fine man. And in my case, I found him a very gentle person, and very much aware of being a role model, not only in the 30s particularly, a role model, not only for cricket, but for Australia. And he was always very...
prideful of that, I think, and always handled himself in the best possible way.
You talked about the crowds in India. What about in England at this, and I'll jump ahead a little bit. I'm sorry to go past your 105 at Lords.
Yeah.
Well, I better not go. We better just talk quickly about that because your name's on the board, the honour board. That must have been a beautiful feeling.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Great. I was very pleased to get that.
So that was, I don't know if we won that one or not, but I know we went.
We did win it, yeah.
Leeds. Now, Leeds, which was the fourth test match in that series.
Yes.
Which was your 13th. Now, I've got a friend whose uncle went down. He wanted to go down and I guess he wanted to see you as well, but he wanted to go down and see Bradman.
We go back to that again. I want to see Bradman.
No. Well, we'll get to the...
It was unlucky.
We'll get to your average of 87 in a moment in the Ashes, in the Invincibles. But he went down to the ground at 12 o'clock at night, and apparently it was just so many people at 12 o'clock at night. He just said, oh, he wanted to go and see him, and he just went home. He didn't. And the crowds for that last day, what was it like to rock up the last day at Leeds? I mean, it's the famous game where...
Really, Rodney, we had to chase 400 on the last day, and the wickets were very slow, but turning a lot and bouncing a lot, you know, all over the place.
Yeah.
And I know Don wrote in his memoirs, I fear that we will be beaten tomorrow. That's what he wrote in his diary the night before. Well, as far as I was concerned, I was bloody sure we'd get beaten. Never gave it a thought that we wouldn't. Anyway, we battled on in the first innings and in the first series, first period, you know, morning. And to lunch, and we were, and Lindsay was the only one who got out, and we really battled on. And then after lunch, we put the pressure on and got away with it. And we just slowly got over the fact that we wouldn't be beaten. And then we realised we could make a draw of it. And then in the last hour or two, we figured, well, we could win it. So it was one of those things that everything you wanted came off. And we're a little bit lucky here and there, but that happens in cricket anyway.
Now, there's 40,000 people inside the pavilion and there's 10,000 out. When you hit a four or a six, was there applause? What was the feeling, the sense in the crowd?
Well, in my 100 that I got, I got 80 of them in fours. The reason for that is that, of course, Yardley, the captain, had to put the close infield. He had to go chasing a win.
Yeah.
And, of course, as everybody was in, and once you got past the fieldsman, it was Fort Bennett. So you know, that helped. It helped with us to get on top, and we could understand what he was trying to do. So it's one of those beauties of cricket. You see both sides of it.
Well, the world record chase at that time, 404, 3 for 404, the performance of A.R. Morris, 182, certainly helped that one, Mr. Morris.
Yes, I enjoyed it, and that was a great feeling.
Discussing the cricket of yesteryear, we've got a very, very special guest on the line, one of Australia's finest ever cricketers, played 46 tests, just going through his test record for Australia, 3,533 runs at 46.18, 12 centuries, 12 50s with a top score of 206, and was a member of the Invincibles in 1948. I speak, of course, of Mr. Arthur Morris, who is with us on the line. Arthur, we were talking before the break about that fourth test and that 182 from you to guide Australia to 3 for 404 and win that test match.
Yeah.
In all of your test career and your cricket career, is that one of your favourite innings?
Oh, yes, it had to be, you know, because it had the lot. It had the battle and everything, the emotional bits of it. So that battling and then getting on top and then winning it, you know, when everybody thought we would, the local press, as you can imagine, said this is a big day, we've beaten Australia since the war, first time since the war. So didn't see many of the press around after the game. As you can well imagine, never seen so many sort of disappointed people. But it was a delight to play with Don, of course it always was. And we rarely spoke to each other out on the field, you know. We sort of knew what each other was doing. And it was one stage where his back got him a bit, and he asked me to take the strike for a little while, and And Compton was on. He bowled very well, not as a regular bowler, so I decided to get stuck into him, and I think that really helped everything along, because it didn't matter where he bowled, I was hitting him all over the place, but I lofted it a lot too. And one of the, you remember Swanton, the writer? You'd remember E.W.
Yep.
Swanton.
Yep.
He said after, he wrote that had Yardley persisted with Dennis Compton, England could have won the game. And all I said was, if they had persisted with Dennis, we would have won about an hour before. So that's different attitudes, different feelings, because I don't think Jim ever played the game anyway.
Can I ask you about, I'm going to lead to the fifth test match, obviously, because we're not allowed to forget the fifth test match for a very good reason. Mm. But can we ask you about uncovered wickets? Did you, after your, say, third beer or whatever you drank of a night, Tom, did you just peer through the window just to see how the clouds were? Because being a batsman, I would have thought I'd love to know the fact that it hasn't rained overnight.
Yeah, you can bat in England on wet wickets. Occasionally, when the sun really comes out, you've got to be a real battle. You've got to battle to score, of course. But you can't do it in Australia, as you know. If it's a wet wicket in Australia, you can just say goodbye to getting runs.
So does the ball skid through in England a little bit and it stays overcast? Like Australia, if the sun comes out, it hardens up and it's a nightmare.
Yeah,
but
that's got to do that, you know.
Yeah.
If it's wettish, it'll probably stop that way. For instance, you were going to talk about the last...
Well, I'd say it rained overnight.
After you asked me questions about that.
I'd say it rained overnight leading up to the fifth test match.
It did. And they decided to bat, but our blokes bowled very, very well, and we got them out for 58 or something like that, I think.
Oh.
And then Sid Barnes and I went out, and I was very surprised when Sid and I got about 150, so we were none for about 150, and Sid got out about 70 or something like that to Eric Hollis. And then Don came out, and I was surprised. I feel I was these days, because when I'm looking back, you're not completely sure. But I'm sure it was later in the day. And I thought somebody would have come out as a good batsman like you, Rodney, a bowler who's come out there to hold things up for a while as the night watchman. But he came out, and that's when he got that awful duck.
Was it pretty dark? Was it at that stage of night, was it?
No, it was clear. There was moisture in the pitch all the time, right through that game. But we had the best advantage of it, because the quicks really got into it.
Was it common to use night watchmen at that time, Arthur?
Pardon?
Was it common to use night watchmen?
Yeah. If it was late. And,
yeah.
It depended on the situation, you know. So,
And when the crowd, when he came out through the gates and walked onto the field and the crowd stood and gave an ovation, what was that like to be out there for that?
Oh, it was extraordinary, you know, because, you know, they even sang, "For he's a good, jolly good fellow." I stuck up the other end, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether I had to get in and sing with them. So I just hummed it to myself and just waited a little thing settled down.
If I was you, I'd be really annoyed, Arthur, because it's a wet wicket. England have only made 52, and you made 196, and England only made 188 in the second innings. So you've played one of the all-time great innings of Test cricket, and yet we talk about Don's duck.
I think it was probably my best innings, because it was doing a bit all the time. As you, I don't know whether you ever saw Eric Hollis bowl, but he's a finger spinner, and he's turning the ball nicely there. When he came out to Australia, of course, he bowled, the ball took most of his fingers off, I think, or the tips of them, because he never spun a ball out here.
Yeah.
You know, because as you know, you've got to be a wrist spinner to really turn the ball in Australia, but if you're a leg break bowler. And so he did bowl very well, and we were battling a bit, and I was kept on going, so that was good. But I got run out, of course, in the end, but I always felt that I'd just got out. I think they'd had enough of me anyway. Anyway, I got a clap from the crowd. Thank God he's disappeared.
They'd gone home, hadn't they, after Sir Donald got out? They'd gone home, hadn't they, after Sir Donald got out?
There was dead silence when he got out.
Yeah.
And as I think I mentioned to you, that Yardley said, jolly well bowled, Eric, you know, and out went Don. It was just an ordinary piece of work. But could you imagine what would have happened today with the television?
Yeah.
And everybody's jumping up and down. In fact, you know, I caught a good catch there. Ray Linville bowled a Compton. And I just fielding near the umpire in a square leg. And he moved me about 5 metres, or a couple of metres anyway. Ray Linville bowled a bounce and he hooked down the line and I caught it. Now, it would have gone through me if I had my hands in front of me. But the attitude, I think, of a fielding side, no one took the slightest bit of notice of me. And I wandered up to Don and I said, why did you move me? He said, I remember in 1938, he hooked down that way with Ernie McCormick. I said, oh, God, what a memory. You've got a memory like an elephant. Years later, we had lunch, and I said to him, I always remember that catch I took at, Court Compton at the Oval. He said, no, he said it was at Lord's. I said, no, it was at the Oval. I could see the gasometer in the background in my mind. It was at Lord's. He said, I'll bet you £100 it was at Lord's. And this is a day of hour on pounds, not dollars. I was so sure of his memory that, the gasometer in the background started to disappear as he went down. And then it got down to £50 and then £20. And finally, I said, well, I'll make it £10. Anyway, next week I got my cheque for £10 and I showed it to Bill O'Reilly. He said, you ought to frame it, son, but I didn't know what he was getting at it all. I never quite understood where he said that. But anyway, it shows you that even the best memory in the world, you can be wrong sometimes.
Well, you've shown you've got a pretty good memory, Arthur. That's not an issue for you at the minute. Hoggy and I were talking during the break about that fourth test match and the Don making the duck and you being out there alongside of him.
And the fifth, yeah.
The fifth. Were you guys aware of your averages at that time? Did you care?
I wasn't. I'm sure he wasn't either. And he got somebody even blamed me for getting 196 because if we'd batted second innings, Don would probably have hit a four or six or something, and would have had an average of 100. But then again, I said, you never know, he might have got another duck. So it's better to leave it as it is, isn't it? Really, you know, the fact that it's not 100 is everybody remembers it clearly.
No, I agree.
Yeah, agree.
It's interesting because he was such an articulate man, not to know. Averages, it's incredible.
At least we could, in the old days, batsmen, we were able to count up to eight and it got easier. And then start to count up to six. We could put a few batsmen off.
Well, you might...
I couldn't remember which one to do, whether to get the single off the sixth or the eighth, you know.
You mightn't know the answer to this next question because you averaged 50 against England, which I think only two other people have done that, actually, against England. We're talking uncovered wickets as well, which makes that incredible.
Yeah.
But at Sydney Cricket Ground, your test career wasn't as good as what it should have been.
I got a lot of runs in interstate cricket. And in fact, I still got the fastest 100 before lunch there. It's 79 minutes. I had to creep in there because Radman won at 82 minutes. That's before lunch, you know, so against Queensland. But I did get a lot of runs there. But that's the way the ball bounces, isn't it, at times? And you can be getting out early in test matches and getting lots of runs in your Sheffield Shield or whatever.
But was it the pressure of the build up? Did you feel that I can't get runs in test cricket here, or the family being there? Or
it takes me 10 minutes to tell you how I got out in my first in a test in 1946. The ball swung about, it was just before a thunderstorm, and the ball swung like the dickens and hit one leg and bounced off another leg and then dribbled up and took as I let the ball outside the old stump go, you know. So that sort of thing happens. And when people say to you, did you enjoy batting on at the Sydney Cricket Ground more than anywhere else? What was your favourite ground? And I always answered, wherever you got 100. Really, that's your favourite ground. So I was lucky enough to get runs elsewhere, so that's all right.
You were there the other year when Michael Clarke made 300 against India?
I saw a lot of it on television. Uh-huh. Well, a lot of it. It's a hell of a lot of runs, isn't it, to look at all the time. But he's a very good player, I must admit. I was very sad in his first game. I was in London at Lord's, and I saw him throw his innings away at about 70, and I thought, oh, don't ever do that again, son. In fact, I mentioned to him, I'm sorry, you know, because getting 100 at Lord's meant something, and at least I thought it did. But I think he's got into the hang of it, that he's realising that, it's good to be remembered.
Later in your career, England, you were killing England all the way along, and then all of a sudden there was a test match up in Brisbane, 1954-55, and you got 153, and a bloke called Tyson took one for 160.
Were
you thinking? Was that the first time you encountered Typhoon?
No, we struck him in a county match, and he couldn't play for the county because he wasn't eligible at that moment, but he could play against a team coming. It's in Freddie Brown's side. I'm not sure what was it, Hampshire or something. And I couldn't figure out why Freddie sent us in. Beautiful wicket. Never heard of this bloke, Tyson. And then I went up the other end, and then I think Colin McDonald took strike at him. And something passed me, flying past me, and I looked up, because I had a heavy night with Fred Brown the night before because we're old friends. And then I saw Col on the ground. Got hit in the knee. Anyway, we were 3 for 5, I think, but after the first 2 hours. Graham Hall came in and played a beautiful the cut shot, a square cut down to fine leg, and he got rolled over. And Jimmy, and then to this stage, I'm captain, by the way, at this stage, and I'm saying, where's Neil? Neil hadn't even got the pants. He had to put his trousers on and put the pads on, let alone, because he needed, should have been in number 3, but he came in number 5. And then but between the two of us, and he played very well, of course, and we got on top. But, oh, God, he was fast, I must say. He was really quick. And he was in Brisbane. He, the captain, Hutton, decided that he wasn't going to move the slips at all. So he really bowled leg theory to Neil and myself because we were both left-handers. In other words, the slips became leg slips. Mm. And we got battered. I still got a little something or other on my shoulder that's still there where he hit me one day. We didn't seem to have all that armour then, and because, as you know, we didn't have headgear. And I remember I used to have a thigh pad. Could only afford one. Every time I put it on one leg, I got hit on the other leg, and then I'd have to shift the thigh pad on it. So it was pretty rough, and pretty good at getting out of the way when they ball bounces. But I liked a hook, and so did Neil, so we got a lot of runs up there.
Well, that was your first encounter, really, to lose. You lost 3 test matches in a row because of Tyson.
Yeah, the Sydney wicket wasn't good at all. And when you got a very, very, very fast bowler bowling, and you're not gauging the height off the pitch.
What was so special about him?
He was very, very strong man. A delightful bloke. He's still living up in the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a delightful bloke. And, the Adelaide wicket was a scream because it had so many holes in it. If a slim bloke, you know, like Lindsay Hassett was, he'd have gone through one of those holes and we'd never have heard of him again. That's how big they were. And, of course, if Tyson hit one side of the hole, they'd go along the ground and the other would go straight at your skull. You know?
That was his 7 for 27, was it?
And that's when somehow or other some mystic bloke came in and watered the wicket. So that I went out on the Monday when the English boys were batting and thank heavens the holes got halfway back. You know, it was obviously watered and, of course, you weren't allowed to do it in the middle of a game. But thank God we didn't.
Arthur, we have to keep moving. And we appreciate your time this afternoon. It's been an absolute joy spending the afternoon with you.
Sorry, I was going on.
No. More than welcome to do that anytime you like. In fact, we could tell stories for hours.
Nice to talk to you, Rodney.
Thanks so much, Arthur.
Okay, son. Bye now.
Good on you, Arthur. Mr. Arthur Morris, one of our invincibles from 1948, one of the finest gentlemen cricket's ever put on the earth for mine, listening to that, and one of our greatest ever cricketers as well. And Hoggy, one of your greatest ever gets.